Hey everyone, Jim Phoenix here, and this next guest had me at LA Horror. Two of the things I love the most on this planet, Los Angeles and horror. We've got none other than Harker Jones, author of Until September and Never Have I Ever, and a bunch of movies that are winning awards left and right, all this and more on the next What's Crackin'. Hit it. Hey everyone, Jim Phoenix here, and boy am I excited for today's What's Crackin'. I've got none other than, Harker Jones. And I have to say, you had me at LA Horror. Honest to God, I saw LA Horror, I'm like, oh, I need you. Hey, LA fan. So, so glad to have you here, Harker. What makes you LA Horror? Because that was very specific, LA Horror. What makes horror LA?
Honestly, I think I was just trying to say where I was and that I am interested in horror, that I write horror and that I love horror. I don't know if there's anything so specific about it. Like, the things that I write don't take place here. It always bugged me growing up, even when I was like, you know, single digit age, it bugged me. Everything took place in Southern California or New York. It's still true. And it bugged me. And so the first couple of scripts I wrote take place here. One is about the entertainment industry. One is about road rage. So it made sense. And so my third one, I was starting to, you know, in my head, I was plotting out where it would take place and, you know, the different places. I'm like, wait. But now I'm doing what everyone else does. Like, I'm going to have this thing to take place in LA where it doesn't need to. The first two needed to. It was
right
about road rage the same anywhere else. I don't know the roads like I know them here, but I grew up in Michigan. So I set all of my projects in Michigan because stories take place everywhere. They don't just take place in New York and LA.
Not just. And plus, Michigan, what was that like? It's Evil Dead territory right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Michigan, Northern Wisconsin, it's all right there in the whole, oh God, I can't remember the studio's name anymore. It's not, I misremember as Pinewood Studios, which is actually England.
It's England, yeah.
But it sounds like that. I'm like, it's like a huge horror. They did Hellraiser there. They did this there. They did all these things there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
What you mean?
But it's an amazing thing where people do try to shoehorn into, it happens in a big city. Well, what about the rest of the globe?
Right.
And it's kind of like, well, things happen. Like, this, the cornfields. Wait, you're from Michigan. Did you ever hear about the, it was someplace in Michigan, a small state, I know. But it's going to be like the spectral lights. Like, oh, you have to see the lights and go through the woods and you have to drive in the middle of nowhere in Michigan and you turn your headlights off and you all freeze to death because it's probably just like the train.
I don't,
to be honest.
So I never did that. I don't know if I've heard of it. If so, it didn't resonate.
You did not miss anything except for my dad digging my car out and swearing at me a lot. That's the only thing you missed. Like, you idiot, you drove home, broke down. But what was your attachment to horror in Michigan? Is it the small town? Because a lot of Stephen King stuff is like small townish.
Well, aside from LA, since I grew up in Michigan, I know Michigan. So right. I could place things there and know what I was talking about. You know, right. I can play something in Utah and, you know, pull it out of my ass. And it's not that it would be bad necessarily, but I certainly don't know it as well, like as an, you know, quote unquote expert.
I mean, I don't want to bash Utah right now, but it would be bad if you put it in Utah. There's not a lot of like, there's like Provo, Orem, which is the same city, I think, and like Salt Lake and a whole lot of nada.
Yeah. And also like, well, the whole lot of nada is, I mean, that's way scarier to me than a city. If someone breaks in right now and tries to kill me, they may kill me, but there's a chance someone will hear me. Whether they come over and try to help is, you know, who knows? But they could call the police. You know, in the country, who the fuck's going to hear you scream?
No, that's why you have guns.
Right? Like, you fight them off yourself. It's
yeah. But that's exactly it. All the, what was it? The Strangers or whatever with, I think it was Liv Tyler, was it now?
Yeah, Scott Speedman, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the middle of nowhere. No one's going to save you. Good luck.
Right. Absolutely. Friday the 13th. You're out in the woods. Yeah. Even Halloween, it takes place in a town, but it's a small town.
I'm glad you brought up Halloween. Did you see Halloween 3? The Witches. The one that's not really Halloween.
Right. I did. I did, but not until I was an adult, like a few years ago.
Okay. What'd you think? I'm just curious. What did you think of it?
I thought it was pretty terrible. And I know that it's kind of got a little bit of a following now. I feel like it's mostly kids who were 14 when it came out. And so it hit their sweet spot. And so they're clinging to it. But fairly objectively, because I didn't see it until I was an adult, it just wasn't very good on its own.
No, I do know people, it's ride and die with some people. Like, this is the best movie ever. You will go to hell if you do not agree with me. And it's kind of like, yeah, but it's not a Halloween, though. It's like a generic random movie. They put a Halloween label on it and it's like, good luck. And it's from the scares of the old trick-or-treating scares of the small towns, like the razor blades and the apples. And like everyone's got cyanide in their Tylenol now and all the other stuff. So if you're drawing from all of this, you're growing up in a small town. And then when do you move to LA? Just curious.
25 years ago.
So in COVID time, what year was that?
Oh, God.
Was it last year for me? I don't know. Was it 2025? Oh, what we're not for?
1999.
Oh, that's an exciting. That's either really great timing or very, very bad timing.
It was great timing. And then, you know, September 11th happened. And then, well, that was a shit timing for everybody.
Yeah. I was in Vegas when that, and then just out of New York. And it was like, everyone, the world stops.
Yeah.
For that, it was like, and you walk out, it's like a ghost town. Like the cities are ghost towns.
Right, right.
And then we fast forward to COVID.
It's weirder than lockdown for COVID.
Yeah.
I think because there was a suddenness to it. And it was just the shock of it. Anyway, yeah, so.
Welcome to the Happy Podcast. So over now we're talking about killings of little kids, 9/11 and COVID.
It's COVID, right.
This is the Happy Podcast today. Now. So you were there for a bit then, a little bit, 25. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
What changed? What changed? Does it change your creative style? Does it change your writing style, your movie style from Michigan to LA?
Well, I wrote two books before I moved here. One, I was 17. So I still lived on a dirt road in Michigan and it was about my hometown. And then I wrote a love story a few years later. And after that, I didn't really write a whole lot. I didn't come here to write. I just came here because I always felt like I was supposed to be here. And
really?
And at one point, I was just disgusted at the state of the world. And I was like, I'm going to write a screenplay. And so I did. And it's very good. It's one of the better ones. And it just kind of got me on a roll. And now I have 10. And I've finished, like really polished the second book, The Love Story, which is a very bleak love story. And one of my former friends said that it read like a horror story because there's a sense of dread throughout. And it's true. And people are, I get some angry letters. It's done fairly well. I sold 4,000 copies. And I get some really angry letters and some really angry reviews sometimes. It's shitty because it means they, you know, aren't giving me 5 stars. But also it means that it really resonated. It landed with them and they're very upset. Like so.
Yes.
They were so emotionally involved that they're angry. Which I try to think is a compliment.
No, absolutely. What was it? I just have, by the way, we're going to get into the books later, or not later, very shortly, because I have, you know, I have my own book out right now, but I see where you were fishing for traditional publishing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, I'm a writer too, and sometimes they see your vision and sometimes they don't.
Right.
And sometimes like, yeah, we'll take it, but you need to change this, this, and this, and this, right? And so it looks like you're running into the same thing and you just said, screw it, I'm just going to do it on my own. Like it's my vision, my money, it's my name on the cover. Like
everything is mine. Whether it succeeds or fails, it's all on me.
That's exactly it. And what was the major hurdle you had to before you like, you know what? I'm doing it my own. What was the last hurdle you had to jump over for that?
In terms of deciding to self-publish?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd reached out to a couple of people, but it was like, how long do I wait for you to get back to me with a no? And some people want it like, okay, well, you can only send it to me. You can't send it out to more people.
Back
to me in 2 days? Absolutely. But you're not going to. So how are you possibly this entitled? And I know it's a claim like, well, this is gold, I want to, you know, have dibs, but that's great, then jump on it. And I just didn't feel like waiting around or pacifying these people's egos. Because who knows? I mean, to wait for all of these people to get back to me could be years. Like, fuck this shit. I'm going to do it. And I did it on my own, and my cover is great. and I've gotten great reviews. And I think also being an editor helps. And the fact that I worked on it over the course of many years, not obsessively, not weirdly, there were years I didn't do anything, years I would poke around a little bit. But as I was doing that, I was also working as an editor. So my skills were getting stronger. And that doesn't mean like I'm the perfect editor, especially for my own stuff. But there's a lot of awful shit out there that is self-published. Like self-publishing still has a little bit of a stigma. And in some ways it should. Some of it is just terrible.
No, it goes back to the old vanity press day.
Right, exactly.
And, or you had $2,000, go for it.
Right. And you need an editor, and you can't be generally your own editor because most writers are not editors. A lot of writers are not even, you know, writers. And being an editor, I've seen this many times. But, you know, it's also lovely that people can get their work out there. You know, and it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of energy to get people to review it, to get the cover, to get it how you want. I tell people all the time, it's critical to get a good cover because there are so many books out there that just scream self-published based on the cover.
The same damn cover. I was going through a convention. I don't even remember, I don't remember the convention. And I was like, oh, I know that photo because I've seen this on different covers, like the third book. It was like the free stock cover, and they're just like, yeah, that's it.
Right.
And those are like the ones that tried. I mean, there's ones that some covers like absolutely just like the Amazon, just the fonts are there, the pictures are there, like just kind of up there, yeah, type,
right,
you know?
Right.
And covers sell. I'm glad you mentioned the cover. I was looking at your cover for Until September. I'm like, damn, that's good.
Oh, thanks.
Like these covers are really good, man. The cover is the first thing people will see.
Right. We judge.
And it has to look good on a JPEG. It has to look good on a shelf.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have a print version. It looks great on bookshelves. It fits in with everything else. It isn't scream self-published.
No. That's half the battle. Honestly, I'm so glad you brought this up because that's half the battle. If for all you indie or self-publishers out there, half the battle is just sucking it up and getting it, being patient. Mm-hmm. Being patient with it. Don't rush. And putting it out when it's done and getting the cover, getting the editing.
A good
getting curve. Just so many rounds.
So many. Watch out for staring. It's just astonishing. Anytime anyone looks at anyone in so many books I've edited, they stare. It just drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I'm working on a book now. I'm on page 80. And I don't know, a few pages back, I was like, how many times have I said staring? And once, without even being conscious, without even trying to avoid it, I said it once. And then I looked for grab, because everyone grabs too. They don't grasp, they don't clutch, they don't clasp, everybody grabs. And so I was like, how many times have I said grab without being aware of it? Not once. Yeah. Not once. I don't know how that happened.
No, that's brilliant. And that's the perfect thing. I've had notes back that are saying, you know, you sound like Rain Man the number of times you put this one word on it. I'm like, 16 times? Really?
And we all have words we fall back on. Don't get me wrong. I get it. I totally get it.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
When I was doing, I wrote a book when I was 17, a slasher. And so I adapted that new screenplay a few years back. The screenplay is significantly more complex, but to me, in my head, it's PG-13. So I was like, okay, I think from my understanding, you get two fucks in a PG-13. So I was like, and I was conscious of this. So one point, I don't know where I was in the script, fairly deep in, maybe done, I don't remember. And I was like, okay, how many times have I had them say fuck? I think it was 36 times. 31 or 36 times. I was aiming for two.
God. Yeah, that's the slightly. Now, okay. Would you then go back, because you're aiming for the rating, right? And for those who don't know, the ratings, they can be a bit voodoo. They can be like, sure, that will get through. And sometimes like, no. Right. And some mysterious note will come back going like, you don't like the color of the what now? Like,
right.
Like, how the hell is that a reading thing? But yeah, did you go back and go, okay, I'm going to edit these to a different word?
I did. I didn't get it down to two.
You didn't get it down to two?
Sometimes it was exactly what needed to be said. It needed to be used in that, in that instance. Other times it was like, oh, it's just a whatever else. Yeah.
No, I agree. And it makes you more conscious of having that goal, having that, you know, the milestone. For social media, I know you're on, I will say Twitter because I'm not going to say the new name. When Twitter first came out, did that make you a better writer?
I didn't really utilize Twitter until the past few years because that was like, oh, you need to have a more of a social media presence. And I had one. I'm fairly active. But I was like, oh, okay, I'll get involved in Twitter. And it takes a lot to build a following. If I tweet something, almost no one responds. But I interact with other people. And cultivate it that way. And it's kind of fun. I've met some really nice people on Twitter. I've gotten some nice things. Someone gave me money for one of my log lines for a script.
Cool.
I know, he gave me the $50. I was like, whoa, okay, I'll take it.
Yeah. I always loved the log line work, man. That was the coolest. It's for log line work, it was like, what was it? They will give you the things. Like, I remember getting these little for freelancing. I'm like, all right, this is what it's about. Da, 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 da. And then you have to go and get the hook and sinker in like two sentences or less.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really it's
a story about it. No. It's always the movie phone voice guy in my head reading it out to me. Like, oh, that must be about this. This was good. When you are using social media because you have to have a social media presence, is there any social media that you're like, I just can't do this right now? Like, I'm not signing up for Pinterest.
I've never done Pinterest. I've never done Reddit. Is that considered social media?
I think, yeah.
I've been on it a couple of times, clicking on links. I don't have a problem with any of these things. I'm just not on them. I did do TikTok. I don't know. I'm really a photo person. I have 24,500 photos on my phone right now, 22,500 of which are my cat. But I don't take a lot of videos. So that is, I don't know why. It's not a decision. Right. But so TikTok, I was like, okay. So that was also like, oh, have a presence on TikTok. Like, okay. But then because I have 24,500 photos, I have to delete to take all the time.
Yeah.
So finally, I was just like, I have to delete not just photos. I need to delete apps. So I deleted TikTok. So I've been on there for a while. But I have Facebook, I have Instagram and Twitter. I know they're kind of all old school at this point, but they're all still really active. And it's not just like promote. I think it's kind of gross. You need to be yourself out there as well. And then also promote. When I'm promoting, oh, hey, I placed in a contest. I don't feel like self-promotion. I'm celebrating a win with people who are either my friends or people I've connected with. I wouldn't say followers, yes, but also people I interact with. You know, so it's not just self-promotion. Oh,
right.
My book for 99 cents today. It just seems kind of gross.
Yeah, no. That's what I really love about I'm on your Instagram right now.
Oh, great.
And Instagram is Harker_J, HARKER_J. And it is the very, very nice photography, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's the what you should see. It's what you should see. It's the you're at the beach, you're doing this, you're outside wearing funny hats, and you got then until September. And then you're doing this, and then the award finalists, it's celebrations. They're actual physical snapshots of your life.
Right.
Versus we've seen them all where it's just, you know, like it's one-sided or a publicist is doing it 24/7.
Right. Or, hey, my
book is dishonest.
On sale here now or blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, I mean,
yeah.
It's fine. But it needs, like you're saying, it needs to be more. It needs to be well-rounded. Otherwise, I'm just your fan. And I'm not just your fan, even if you're like an actor or something. So I am your fan. If it's just that, if I look someone up, some guy from a movie, and it's all just shirtless photos on Instagram, it kind of freaks me out when someone is that insecure that they need that much validation. It freaks me out. But like, also, like, it's fine if there are shirtless photos, of course, but if it's just that, I'm just turned off.
Yeah.
It should be
no.
Or like, here, I'm with my sister doing the thing at the Mexican place or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it comes back to the U2 lyric for me is like, look ugly in the photograph. I forgot the song right now, but Bono's lyric was look ugly in a photograph. Like, it's okay. You don't do the self-polish. It's not always filtered. It's not always, this is, you know, PR. You have to look like yourself once in a while. You just have to be yourself. People want to see you. That's what social media is. Right. The social parts first, you know, that's what it used to be. And I love these rankings, and I love I'm gonna mention something right now for those of you who do not know, and I'm just stealing this from Advocate right now. Those who don't know Harker Jones, you should actually will. I love the poster four, well, a lot of them, but one hit wonder. I'm mentioning it right now because there's so many bloody finalists and award winner and this festival and that festival, special select, this one, big one, big one, big one. You hit like home run after home run, dude.
Thank you.
Like absolutely amazing. And the poster itself is brilliantly done. It's the fonts are, they're popping out, the musical, the lines are coming out, the framing is just all, it's just gorgeous.
I was thinking about that a couple of hours ago for some reason. I don't know why, but this popped into my head, the poster and kind of like the shitty self-published covers. There are so many short films, independent, you know, obviously not ones with huge stars, and the posters are so ugly. And like, what are you doing? It doesn't take that much. And so for some reason, again, this is in my head, I started thinking about One Hit Wonder because I wasn't in charge of that. And that looks so good. And I'm so impressed with what they did. But that, especially because, and they consulted me on it a lot. I was very involved, which is very nice. I've been very fortunate to be as involved in productions because a lot of times the writer is like, okay, thanks for the script. We're going to have someone else rewrite it. You might get an invite to the premiere, you know?
Oh, ain't that familiar?
Ain't that familiar?
Yeah. Welcome to the world. I mean, that's, if anyone doesn't know, the sometimes the name of the screenwriter you see in the credit ain't the guy who did the writing. It's the last guy who did the writing.
Right. The one who did the
or the one who has a great agent, as like the old Mel Blanc joke was, like, he didn't voice all of Looney Tunes, but he got credit for all of them.
Oh, interesting. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But and I'm looking at like Cole and Collette, and I love the photo here. This is all the information you ever need to know about the movie. You've got the knife, you've got the look, you've got the hoodie. It's done. It's done. These are so cool. And that's exactly it. You're in a, okay, books, if you have a bad cover, you probably won't get a lot of, you probably won't get a lot of buys just on cover. You know, no one's going to surf and saying, oh, this is a great cover. No, the bad cover, you're going to skip over. But they might look on the inside.
They might.
If the subject matter, they might. But if a movie, it's a visual medium. If your movie poster is bad, like, how bad is the movie going to be?
Good point. I think about that with movies, like big movies too sometimes. I'm like, that is the best you could do. Like, you have money behind you. I did better, and I'm just me.
Yeah, it's... What was the old formula? Like Kevin Smith used to give us out. If the movie costs $400 million to make, their PR budget is $400 million also. It's like, whatever it is, doable. And then they just, yeah, exactly. We've all seen movies where like the poster, I'm like, what? I don't even know who's in it.
Right.
Or I'm not going to name this one movie that completely misleading where the star of the day has like a small cameo and they get the big title.
Oh, I hate
that. And it's like, I was like, oh, that's not a Jackie Chan film. He's in it for a half second.
I just think like the worst thing you can do in marketing is mislead your audience because then they're disappointed, if not pissed.
Yes.
Disappointment is worse than actively disliking something. At least you have a feeling about like, this was so terrible. Let me tell you why it was so terrible because I will tell you why it's so terrible. If it's you're just pissed off because you're like, that's not what they told me it was.
Yeah.
Then you're just like angry in general. Not that
I'm absolutely
angry all the time, and I'm not.
but that's it. That's the difference between a trailer that's beautifully cut trailer that might be all the good bits of the movie, mm-hmm. but at least they are the good bits of the movie. Mm-hmm. Versus, oh, that's not the movie at all. What the hell? Cut this. Like, cut this trailer, man.
Right.
We see that, and I'm going back to. Until September, right?
Yep.
So is this the one that you were getting, we'll say, nice and loud, also loud? We'll say reader letters, not always fans, reader letters. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I get the quote unquote, the reader mail, yes, for. A lot of people really love it. I've gotten one that was very angry. And I've responded to everybody, but this guy, I was like, well, 2 weeks later, I was at the gym and I was like, I should respond to him. And I read it again. And it's like, he's really angry. Like, I don't think I should engage with this person. I don't think he was going to come to my house or something, you know.
Yeah.
But just in general, like, I don't know. So I never responded. I feel kind of bad. But yeah, at least I reached him. And someone just recently sent me an email saying that he's like, I don't know that I loved it, but I couldn't stop reading it. Something along the lines of,
yeah,
you, oh, fuck, I don't remember. Something like, you were in, you engaged me and I was engaged. What he said was better than that, but it's something like, I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. And he wishes it had been different, but I don't think he would have been as moved if it had been different.
Right. And that's all we ever want. If you can have a conversation, because it's a conversation with someone who's not there.
Right.
And then you do your part of the conversation, and then they get their part of the conversation, and eventually in time and space, like throughout the years. And if you can engage someone, it left an imprint. Like, yeah, the angry, I get it. I've actually asked my publicist, like, yeah, do not respond to that one. Like, like they're like, do not respond to the very angry ones. It ain't going to go nowhere.
Right, right.
Like, you can't talk him out. He just doesn't want anything. Like, okay. But the ones that are like, they see something or see something differently, or they're connecting to it, and they don't necessarily respond the way you think they will, but the response is genuine and the response is big. That's what art is.
Right. And I had one reviewer say that he didn't think that the ending was earned. He's wrong. But
definitely wrong. This guy's wrong.
But at least he was explaining why. It wasn't just fuck this shit, one star. Which again, at least I reached you. But I also compare it to Call Me By Your Name, Brokeback Mountain, and Atonement. So I don't know what the hell you people were expecting. It I can't be clearer. I make very clear it's not a romance. It is a love story.
Right.
Very different. And so I 100%. Mostly knock wood, people have understood this. But there are some people who want it to be a Harlequin romance.
Right. And I think that is part of the expectation generation of read the cover.
Right.
Do at least that much. Turn the book over. There's nothing on this one. Like, read the cover, like, oh, that's what the book's really about. Okay.
Right. Know what you're in for. And I don't mean spoilers. And I'm a huge spoiler phobe. So my jacket copy gives away nothing.
Right.
But it sets you up for what to expect.
Yes.
What ride to get on without knowing, you know, where you're going. You know what I'm saying?
No. But that's exactly it. And I think the people who should be far and few between that bought it, misunderstood it, and those people should have some kind of like, oh, it's on me. My bad. It was my cup of tea.
Right.
Absolutely. Versus I must let everyone know on Goodreads, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, multiple accounts. I'll make five, TikTok book, whatever it is. Right. like, oh my God. Like at some point, you have to think, man, like I must have really touched them because they're really pissed at this point.
Right.
Is it still kind of like a boost, even though they're saying negative things? It's kind of like the heel part of wrestling. Like, oh, they're booing me, but I must be doing something right.
Yes. I just want to embrace them because I know that they're feeling a lot of pain. And I love that. To make them feel better, I know that it's okay to feel that pain.
Yes. I think that's beautifully said. I think we came to the part in the world where everyone's picked some kind of side and the other side always has to be wrong and they don't have feelings or just real. I mean, that's
right.
So bizarre.
Right.
And I'm glad you said it that way because it validates a person, even though it's not an experience you want or had, it validates that they're a person.
Right.
And sometimes it's all they need. It's like the pain. You're right. I think beautiful, man. Good job. Thanks. Now, I was like, oh, share my on that one. I'm going to switch gears to this one. Never have I ever. Never have I ever. I'm looking at that again. This is beautifully done. The poster's amazing.
Thanks.
Trust no one because it could be anyone. The use of color is great here. It's definitely set in L.A. I'm joking because it's the forest of L.A. We all see the deep forest of L.A. What made you write Never Have I Ever?
That is the slasher I wrote when I was 17, still living on that dirt road in Michigan. So I didn't know, I mean, I knew Ann Arbor, but like my main world was I went to school in Manchester, this little town, which to this day does not have a traffic light, not even a flashing four-way. Our major intersection is the four-way stop. So then I was outside that, 20 minutes outside that on a dirt road. So that was my general world, because that's where I went to school. So we went to Ann Arbor, but like Manchester was my town. And right. So, you know, I was a writer since I was 13, and I was 17. I just sat down and wrote this book. And the story's really good, and it wasn't Never Have I Ever at that point, but then I adapted it to a screenplay and gave it that hook. And yeah. I think I mentioned earlier, it's significantly more complex. The characters revealed things to me that were not there before. And it is so much better. And so now I'm readapting that into a book again based on the screenplay. It's so much more complex than even the screenplay. It's so much fun. It's so exciting. And I've just always loved horror. That's why I'm here. And I've always loved slasher the most. I think because people are like, oh, but ghosts and zombies are so boring. I don't get it. But like, you know, but they're supernatural. So that's scary. I'm like, I mean, okay, that's valid, I guess. But to me, it's not scary because they're not real. Ghosts, you know, I'm open to ghosts. Zombies, I mean, stop. In terms of like actually being afraid of them, whatever. But people kill people. That's scary. That happens every fucking day, everywhere. That is
small town, big town. Yep.
Right, exactly. Small town, big town. It happens everywhere all the time. Yeah. And that, I think that's why the slasher thing, like, and home invasion really freaks me out, because it's really ground. Slasher is really, you know, heightened and over the top, which is part of the appeal, of course. But home invasion is so much more grounded, and so it really freaks me out, home invasion. Like, The Purge. The Purge doesn't scare me, but there's something, it's so elevated. You have to be willing to go with the premise. And once I was like, okay, I'm signing on for this movie. So, okay, I'll go with this. It sounds ridiculous, but like, okay.
Yeah.
All of them have been really solid, including the series.
And the series is amazing.
Oh my, I always think about that frat boy. I did not see his arc coming. That was so weird.
it's bizarre. I think that's Blumhouse, the Purge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they either hit it out of the park or completely whiff it, but they keep swinging, man. They'll keep swinging.
Right. Absolutely. You know, and it take a swing. I mean, I'm willing to watch you swing, and I hope you get to the park each time.
Yeah. And they always budget it out nicely. And I didn't think, okay, after the first Purge, I'm like, okay, cool. And in the sequel, I'm like, what are we doing? And then another one popped up. And the series, like, how could you possibly have done it really well? That's how they could have done it. They could have done it by making you care, by having characters that you care about, and then you don't see the arcs coming, and they pop you, and you go, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really impressive what they did, especially with the series, which didn't do that well, you know, two seasons, which I was grateful for a second season. But I'm surprised it didn't last a little bit longer, because it was so well done. But I feel like it doesn't even have a following, like a culty kind of thing, which is weird.
Yeah. It's going to be Paranormal Activity 12,000. I think they kept shifting back and forth the money a bit, but we have that, and I think you hit it home where if you believe in ghosts or not, zombies or not, that's debatable. Everyone needs to believe in strangers will harm them.
Right,
that's primal.
Yeah, it's primal. Like,
not part of my tribe might come and kill me.
Right,
and that's anywhere, big city, small city, middle of country. You never know. It's
right.
It's the forever story, like the traveler that you could not exactly trust.
Right.
And we have these things, and you took it from something you wrote when you're 17, and then as you get stronger, believe it or not, writers, we get stronger as we, you know, as we work out. It's just reps, really. As you get a stronger writer, you go, I can make this better, but I make it better in a different genre, in a different format. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh my God, I'm learning so much more about the characters, which is awesome to hear, by the way. I can now make this into a new book and even go into greater detail and take your time and unfold it more. That's got to be an amazing journey for you.
It really is. And especially because I've known these characters since I was 17, like they're my friends. You know, all of our characters are our friends, whether they're, you know, heroes or villains, they're our friends. They're all part of us. And so I get to spend time back in my hometown, because that's where it still takes place. And I get to spend time with old friends who are revealing more and more to me. And you know, as friendships do, you learn things about your bestest friends throughout life, throughout the journey. And yeah, it's really, I wasn't intending to do this book. I don't even know what happened, but something sparked at some point. Sorry. But I want it to be done and published by September because it takes place at Halloween and it's horrible. And so I want that to be ready. We'll see. I'm on page 80. I'm really worried about all of this. And I have the cover, as you saw, and I've got, I now, after having worked on Until September, the love story, like I realize a lot of people who review it, a lot of contests, they want it before it's published, which I didn't even think about any of this when I was doing Until September. So, you know, that ship sailed for a lot of those options, but for Never If I Ever, I want to be on top of those things so I can get the reviews, right, enter them in the contest, get the galleys to people beforehand, et cetera, just to really get some traction. So ideally that will get more interest in the script, which people love. People love the script, right, not enough to buy it yet, but still they love it. And that's really reassuring because this is also one of the good ones. This is a really solid script.
I like that.
A friend just gave it to a director friend who doesn't have the money to launch it, but he's like, when this does happen, I want to be in talks to direct it.
Awesome.
Like, I read it twice. It was fun to talk to someone, especially because I'm writing it, the book now too, so I'm living in this world, to talk to someone who just read it twice so we could really get in depth about it.
Right.
It was really fun.
No, that's an amazing thing. And sometimes, you know, even when scripts are like, we'll option it.
Yeah.
And then like, that's it.
Yeah. In some ways, I'm like, just give me money. At the same time, give me money and produce it.
Yeah, right.
Give me money and produce it well.
Yeah.
Do this right. You know, and they could take it, make it, you know, really hard R. There's no nudity. There's no sex. There's minimal gore. Because gore is fine, but like that's not horror to me. That's over the top.
Right.
Horror is suspense. And so this is scary. And I was writing this book version right now, like a couple of days ago, I got to the first kill and I was like, this is scary. This is the first time, rarely do I scare myself. You know, it's not that scary. And I was like, this is really kind of fucked up. Which, so the book might be a little more R. But my point is that like the producers, the director may want to have nudity and sex and, you know, make it really graphic, which, okay, like do it well and I'm on board and give me money. But in my head, there doesn't need to be nudity. That's not what this is about.
Right.
One of the boys is a girlfriend, but I mean, it's not about their relationship. There's no need for sex. I'm all for sex. Don't get me wrong. And nudity. Why not? But I don't like when it's shoehorned in for no reason.
Well, we were talking about maybe before we started recording, but I think it was Strangers, right? That doesn't have nudity in it, does it? Does it?
No, I don't think so.
No.
There's some and they with the friend, but like, it's nothing. I don't even know what it's rated. It's probably rated R because it's so intense.
Right. But nudity would be like PG-13.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be like PG-13.
JCPenney catalog.
Right.
Back in the day, right? Yeah. I love that because I actually do love horror. And I think we need more horror that scares. Like, honestly, that's grounds and doesn't rely on, well, say, trickery.
Mm-hmm.
It relies on great storytelling.
Right. It's all about the story and the characters and, you know, and the mood and what you do with it. Of course, the editing and the score, blah, blah, blah. I don't mean to minimize that, but I mean, it starts with the story and the characters and all the rest complements that. It augments that.
Absolutely. I can't say it better than that. Now, I will mention, here's the number. For One Hit Wonder, 63 film festivals. You got into 63 film festivals. That is an amazing number.
Well, wait. That's Colin Collette and One Hit Wonder combined.
Okay. That's still an amazing number with several awards.
Right, several awards. One Hit Wonder got bigger awards, bigger festivals, which is great. I mean, I'm happy with anything. I mean, I just won two awards in October, one for a short script, a thriller called Spunk, about two college kids who embark on a romance via a hookup app called Spunk, !! While there's a serial killer roaming campus.
Either way.
And then right there, a serial camper. But I love to go camping.
A lot of tents. There's a lot of tents action here. Sorry. Puns.
And then did you hit pause?
No.
Oh, I thought you said, sorry, pause.
No, I said puns. No, I said puns. It's a tense, sorry, yeah.
And then I won something for a wedding comedy, another short called Mindy and Martin's Melee. A lot of bridesmaids and a groomsman who just implode right before a wedding. And, so my point is, like, to win anything is so thrilling, and it's so baffling, and just like, kind of, how did this happen? Of course, I worked on it hard and all that, but still, so many people do. So to place in anything, like the book placed in a couple of contests recently, last year, and it's just like top seven kind of thing. It's just like, wow.
That's that's always the amazing feeling. It's a bit of, it's validation. It's a warm fuzzy, back in my days, as the name will say it, warm fuzzies. And it's the, not so much people really like me, but damn it, I knew it was good and people agree.
Yes.
It's the art, you're like, you're proud of your baby. You're proud of your baby, and your baby just hit a home run.
Right, right. Like,
that's exactly. That was it.
Because not
all, you're almost like, yeah.
Not all of them absolutely land. Like with me, even some of my scripts, like I have 10, six, five or six, it's to the point where I'm starting to lose count, are really solid. And I know the other four or five have potential.
Right.
They're not there yet. And I know that. And I think a lot of people can't tell that, can't see the difference. It's critical. Like, you have to be able to assess your own things as objectively as you can. I understand it's still your baby, right, and it, you know, is beautiful and smart and kind and et cetera. But it's still, you know, maybe it's an asshole to some other kid at school. You know,
well, right, but that's the thing. I think, because we're going back to, you know, 17 years old to now, you know, you grow so much and you push it out. Could you imagine saying, okay, I found this when I was 17, I'm pushing it out as is?
No, oh my god, there are right. There are books out there like that, though.
That's exactly the thing, because you see it like, okay, I'm a stronger person, I can make this better, and I'm gonna do this and this with it. It goes back to, God, comedian Pete Corielli, as you say this, he was giving some comic lessons after a set that they've kind of bombed on, I guess.
Oh, no.
And it's like, there's no such thing as a unfunny joke. It's just a joke not strong enough yet to tell.
Ooh, oh, I like it. That's exactly it.
Yeah. And there's no thing, like, the story, as long as you understand, like, you keep working on it, the story, you'll be strong enough one day to tell that story. Great. But if you're like, oh, the story's awesome, put it out, and it's like, it's not ready for prime time. It's not ready for prime time.
Right.
And you only get one chance at the story.
Right, absolutely. I had a friend who was, he'd worked on this thing. It didn't seem like he worked on it that much, but he seemed to work on it so much. And he gave it to me, and it was stunningly inept. I can't think of something more unpublishable. And he's like, I can't help it. I'm just done. I can't work on this anymore. I'm just going to send it out. I was like, okay. Then he put it up on Wattpad?
Oh yeah, Wattpad.
Yeah.
Like WATD.
I can never find it on there. I've looked for it, but I guess he was just done. I'm like, you can't just be done because you want to be done. You're not done until it's done.
Yeah. The story gets to dictate that, not you.
Right. 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 Exactly. Anyway, yeah. So I hope he's doing very well.
But if you want to check it out on Wattpad, we have to think, no, we can't look it up. But that's, you know, I came through writing, and I went through, okay, first book, very cocky. I was like, I signed a contract when I was like 19. I'm like, here's a book. It was okay. And then you study the craft, and then you get a bunch of feedback from professionals, and then you go like, okay, that first book was shit. And then you're like, all right, you can't get it back.
Right.
But you make sure everything else from there on out, you kind of like, okay, I really need to work on this, the scenes. How many characters do I have? 45 characters? Motherfucker. Okay, no. I only mentioned one character once. Why do I even do that? Like, you start looking as a critical eye, right?
Absolutely.
You start dialing it back. You start combining things. You start hitting it. For screenwriting, did you ever like go over, okay, you're doing, how many pages was the shorts, how many pages do you remember for screenwriting?
Funk is like 12 and Mindy and Martin's Melee is 20.
20, okay.
Which is kind of long for short, 20.
Right. And then you're doing like, is it still about 1 minute per page or?
Yeah. Mindy
more or less
is a one location thing, so it's really talky. So it probably would be more like 16 minutes would be my guess.
Right.
We're intending to get it this spring. We'll see what happens.
Well, very cool. I've seen people miss that though. You know, it's like, there's my short. It's 85 pages. I'm like, no, it's not a fucking short, man. Those are notes. Like, that's not even like, that's it. You need to like to get to the format of it at least.
Right, right, right. People don't.
Yeah. Understand. So was that book was that work that your friend showed you was it just like unstructured? I'm trying to.
It's one of those things where it sounds so awful to say, but like you want to say to them, you're just not a writer. And that's okay.
Absolutely.
I didn't say this obviously because.
I'm not a painter.
I'm not a painter either. Oh my God.
Right? You know, it's like.
I am so bad. Even the paint and sip things. So I have a little bit of wine. They show you exactly what to do. And I'm trying to do the thing. It's so bad. People can't even lie. Be like, oh no, it's fine. They can't even do that. It's so.
And they're drunk. Right. They've been drinking a little bit and they still can't say it was good.
Right, right.
Like, oh my God, we'll put this over here.
And that's fine. I'm not a painter. That's fine. The difference is like with my friend and various other people, I'm sure they want to be a writer. I don't want to be a painter. So it's easier for me to be like, whatever.
Paid by number. I can't even do the Q-tip in the water thing anymore. I'm like, I don't know what that was.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know what he's doing now. I presumably he's not writing.
and it's but this brings back to another aspect of art. You have to take rejection.
Yes.
You have to take notes. You have to, and not take offense of them.
Right.
They're not trying to offend you. They're trying to help you. Someone took their time to actually give you feedback on how to make something better. And we're not talking about the rage hate mail. That's just jackasses. So like jackasses going jackass.
Offering constructive criticism.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the stuff that you just – what was the someone's like, I want to be a writer. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, we're a popular kid in school. Like, yeah, don't worry about it then. Like, good luck with that career. I'll be over here. You know, you've never been rejected in your life? Like, just wait. And sometimes they give nice notes and sometimes they don't. But when you're doing for your book reviews, editor and literary journal of Gertrude Press, see, I'm reading now. How did Gertrude Press come about?
It started with Trump's ascension to the presidency. The editor, I just learned this recently, the editor wanted something to not lash out, but to combat that in an artistic way.
Right.
So she created this journal and I was the book reviews editor. It ended up going on hiatus last January, maybe 2 Januaries ago, but they're doing a conference this fall in Hollywood.
Cool.
So I'm a script reader for that. So
that
should be fun. And the first script I started reading and it is really good. That is so rare. It's really good.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is pretty.
So I'm still involved in Gertrude, even though the journal itself is no longer in existence.
Yeah, well, I think we all had that reaction of the not quite existential dread, but it's not quite not.
Right, I was going to say that, not quite not, yes.
Yeah. And we might get the sequel, the reboot. Why not? I don't know. Timeline's weird today, man. And
yeah.
I think a lot of us, especially in the arts, needed to create our own safe space.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm always glad for that. And I see things like to support queer arts. I think everyone should. If you ever want to get really, really sad one day, look at the Trevor Project's stats page on how many, you know, and just giving safe spaces for people to explore who they are.
Right.
And I think that's what art should always do.
It should always be a safe haven, even if it is really political or really in your face. Like it should be eliciting something, some response, whether it's emotional or it's mental or whatever, some response. And it should, this is really dramatic, but it should change you in a way.
It should. And that's what we're going back to our very first comment. Even the ones who didn't see quite eye to eye what you thought until September would be, it still changed them in some way.
Right.
They still connected. They still connected and they still wrote out their truthful, like, yeah, I've learned don't read ever read comments sometimes. But yeah. But sometimes you get the mail and it touched them in one way or the other, and they had to write something truthful. Those I'll take, even if they're smaller starred ones, I'll take those because I know I touched someone.
Right. Absolutely. And it's really, really meaningful every time. Every time. And I tell people, yeah, they respond to their emails, just, this is really meaningful.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you take the time. Some people just blow them off.
Yeah. I mean, when's the last time I sat down and wrote to an author? I don't even know.
Right.
And
we've gone away from that as a society, I think.
Right. Right.
And
so it's really meaningful that someone took the time to read.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm glad. And of course, for more, and we always do this, always, not always, sometimes we don't do this at all, but I'm doing it because I like it. And if you want, until September, first person to slide into whatever DMs I have on my socials, we will get shipped out to you, no problems, nothing at all. Ask, boom, put it out, no problem for you. And you know what? Cole and Colette, the short films, if you ever see a one-hit wonder, if you've seen these through the festivals, get them. And I cannot wait. You're saying Never Have I Ever is going to come out September-ish?
That's my
aim. Get this roll.
That's my aim. So we'll say, okay, cover, as you saw. So like, I'm that's
beautiful.
Done. And that's the least of my worries. It's really getting, the story won't change. That's the thing. I already know the story.
Good.
So it's not like I'm making it up as I go along or even right. going by an outline. Like, I've lived at this for so long that it should be doable by September.
Well, I look forward to it. I want a copy. keep me in mind for review. Keep me in mind for review. And if you want to check out some very, very, very cool photos and some demon cat stuff, it's going to be Instagram, Harker, H-A-R-K-E-R, underscore J for Instagram. And Harker, we always end with one question, the same question. What would you do? What advice would you give 17-year-old you as you're writing a story?
It's funny you ask that because I was asked to write an essay, a letter to myself at a younger age.
Oh.
And the I sold my first children's book, which is now in process. And the editor,
congratulations.
Said, the editor wrote to the publisher and the publisher forwarded it to me. And the editor said something like, this is one of the best pieces of work that's ever come across my desk. I was like, oh my God. Anyway, awesome. So that publisher asked me to submit an essay for this book to support LGBTQ youth in North, in general, but in North Carolina where they're based. And right. So I wrote a letter to myself at 14 back on that dirt road in Michigan. And I just said, it gets better and then it gets worse and then it gets better and then it gets worse. And so just hold on to your hat. You are going to get so much more than you're even dreaming about right now. You don't even know. And at the same time, you're still not where you want to be. So you'll still be frustrated.
There's always something to strive for. I think that is beautiful though. That is absolutely beautiful. And congratulations on the children.
Thanks.
Children's book.
Yeah, that's
English
coming out this spring, I guess. I'm not involved in that. It's kind of nice.
Right.
It's not you. Like, it's until September. It just still is all me. It's nice that someone else is taking the reins. Like, okay.
Press away that way. Let me know when you need something else.
Right.
That's,
right.
I know. The auto mode. I love that one. Well, geez. I said 20 to 30. We have 53. Look at that.
53. All right.
Look at that. Not bad. Not bad. Good time. Thank you very much for coming by. I've had a great time. I hope you did too. And we learned. I love author talks. We rock and roll like this. So thanks, everyone. Bye.
Take care, everybody.